The opinions expressed by the host and guests on Where Did the Road Go are their own and do not represent those of WVBR or its management. Our aim is to explore the fringe, lost civilizations, alternative science, the paranormal, and much more. Join us on the web at wheredidtheroadgo.com, where you can send us questions for our live or future guests via email or the live chat room. And remember to subscribe to us on iTunes. And now welcome to this week's edition of Where Did the Road Go?
And this week on Where Did the Road Go? We have as our guest Lyle Blackburn, who has been an author and musician. And Lyle, are you there?
I'm here.
Awesome. All right. Your book is entitled what?
The Beast of Boggy Creek, The True Story of the Falk Monster.
Okay. And this how long has this book been out?
It came out, it's almost been 1 year.
Okay. And this is based on what?
Well, it's a creature known as the Falk Monster, which has been sighted over the years in southwest Arkansas. And it's most famous because of a movie that was made in the 1970s called The Legend of Boggy Creek. And there were several sequels that were made. But The Legend of Boggy Creek was quite a success in the 70s in the movie and the drive-in circuit. It was a small, low-budget movie that was made for $150,000 and went on to make $25 million. So it was a real phenomenon, and people who, you know, kind of remember horror movies and drive-ins back in the 70s all remember this. You know, if I'm out at a book signing or something, so many people come up. And so I had seen the movie sometime when I was a kid at a drive-in and always loved it. We can talk about this more. I live in Texas, only about 3 hours from where this is in Arkansas, so it was kind of in my own backyard, and being, you know, somebody who was interested in Bigfoot creatures and things, it was very cool. And so years later, fast forward, once I start doing some writing, I started looking into the case and just kind of trying to find out what was real, what was true, and what wasn't about it. And that kind of led to the book, because I found that there was just a really great story about the history of the sightings of this creature, which continue all the way up till today, as well as just what all went on with the making of the movie and what happened to this little town of Falk after they had a hit movie made about, you know, a monster.
Now, the movie's not... I actually just watched that this week. I'm pretty sure I saw it back ages and ages ago. But it's not so much a horror movie as like a pseudo-documentary.
Right. And that's one reason it was so effective, because, you know, this is popular with horror films today. If you look at things like the Blair Witch Project or Paranormal Activity, they kind of try to make it look like it's real or a documentary. Well, the way The Legend of Boggy Creek was filmed, it looked so much like a documentary that it really, you know, kind of freaked people out. And I can remember as a kid looking at it, thinking in my kid brain, I was thinking, well, how were they there with the cameras at the same time these people saw that monster? I thought it was like they were, you know, live filming it. I didn't understand it was a reenactment, because they used real people to reenact it, so it looked so real.
And how many of the cases on there turned out to be real cases?
The majority of them.
Okay.
And that was the funny part about it, is because, you know, you hear people going, oh, yeah, you know, there was a couple of sightings back in the 70s, and then they made a movie and made up some stuff. And, you know, I was even under that impression as well. But once I really delved into the case, I realized, wow, these were all based on actual reports by real people, and that there was actually many, many more sightings that weren't in the movie. So it was kind of cool to find that out.
And the sequels are actual horror movies, right?
More or less. I mean, the one that came out after that, The Return to Boggy Creek, is more, it's kind of like a kid's movie. And it reminds me of one of those, like, Return to Witch Mountain, some kind of a Disney thing. It's so-so. And then the original director, Charles Pierce, finally relented and directed Boggy Creek 2 in the 80s, and it's pretty horrible. I mean, you know, I mean, you strike it so perfectly with the original one that he was nowhere he could go with it, and it you know, it was goofy, but
yeah,
you know, kind of kept the Boggy Creek thing going in a way. You know, the legend kept it alive.
What did happen to the town after all this popularity?
Well, Falk is located near Texarkana, and Texarkana, by its name, is located on the border of Texas and Arkansas, close to Louisiana. So the little town of Falk, at the time in the 70s when all this sort of started coming to light, the population was 500 people. So when they first had some sightings back in the 60s, regionally, that was drawing in some people that were, you know, kind of interested in what was going on. But once that movie came out, and now it's, you know, it's on the national and in some cases international circuit, it became so popular that you had, at some estimates, they said there was as many people coming through that town trying to, quote-unquote, hunt the monster as people lived there. So, wow. You know, they don't even have a police force. So it was completely out of hand. I talked to a girl that one of her incidents had been reenacted in the movie, and she said they lived on Boggy Creek. And she said at that time they would get up in the morning and it would come out and there would be all these people on their front lawn in lawn chairs. And they'd be like,
"Man,
excuse me, what are you doing?" Like, "Oh, you know, we're out looking for the Falk monster." So it was just a really surreal situation.
Hmm. How many of the original witnesses from the film did you get to interview?
Not too many. A lot of them have passed on, unfortunately, that were documented in the original. Like, because what the movie did, it highlighted a lot of the sightings that had occurred in the 60s. So right. Some of the people that saw it in the 60s, you know, they were on in age at that point. So by now, you know, 40 years later, a lot of them had passed on. But I was able to locate some of their immediate relatives and things like that. So, you know, I was able to interview a few of them and then some immediate relatives. And as well, there's been sightings that have occurred since, a lot of sightings. And so I was able to interview quite a few people firsthand about later sightings that, you know, weren't in the movie because they hadn't happened yet. So that was, you know, very, very...
I totally forgot what my question was just about to be. How do you judge these people's, like, honesty when you talk to them?
Well, I mean, you know, I've been kind of, you know, researching Bigfoot sightings and talking to people for years now, and you just kind of get a sense of who is, you know, exaggerating or who's telling you something that's not true. I mean, of course, you know, ultimately you don't know exactly, but you can pretty much tell the people that are making up wild stories versus those that, you know, they're telling you something honestly and something they themselves can't explain. So you come away with the feeling that, you know, I'm not sure what they saw. We can't prove, but they definitely saw something. And, you know, that makes it intriguing because, you know that they ultimately believe what they saw, and they're just like we are. You know, they would like to know what it is, and, you know, that they would hope to be able to prove something like that. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's a true mystery.
And how many people do you think you've talked to about this particular creature?
Oh, I spent a year writing the book and going back and forth up to Falk. And in the process, you know, there was several people in the town that, you know, had a great wide knowledge of it. So, you know, well, there's a guy there that ran a little museum for Miller County. You know, he had a lot of information. And then there'd be a few other what I call Falk monster historians. So I had, you know, the kind of the core people that would help me, you know, figure out the chronology and the history. And then outside of that, you know, I interviewed, you know, I don't know, 20 or 30 people at least that had sightings or recollections of how these events went down. And I mean, it hasn't stopped. Even once the book came out, then I'm starting to get even more stuff. So it's almost every few weeks I get another person that has a story. So it's been quite a bit.
Wow. Okay. How far back do these cases go?
The first sighting that I could roughly estimate is 1908.
Wow.
And that's coming quite obviously, second or third hand from people passing this story. And then there was a few sightings, secondhand sightings from in 1932. Then there was one in the newspaper from 1946, which is what, if you really read most people's accounts, they'll say it all started in the 40s because some guy had mentioned in the 70s that he had heard somebody talk about it in the 40s. So that's where they get that number. But then once the 50s and 60s started going, that's where you really get the bulk of the sightings. So because, I mean, there was just more people living there. I mean, and not a lot of people, but there was more. Back in 1908, there just wasn't a lot of people down there. So I'm sure, people had seen something and never mentioned anything, or there just wasn't enough people present to be able to cite these monsters.
Right, right. And are there any Native American legends or anything about it?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, all the tribes, if you start looking into all the Native American tribes of America, they all pretty much have a word for hairy man or forest giant or something along that line. So while it's hard to determine what that actually referred to, there's no doubt that they had some sort of word in their language which referred to this. I mean, you would think, why would they talk about hairy giants, if they hadn't had sightings? But, of course, that's conjecture. But
right.
In particular to the Falk Monster case, there is some newspaper reports that date back to the mid-1800s that are basically the equivalent of Sasquatch sightings very near Falk.
You there? Oh, we might have lost him. Let me play this real fast and we'll get him back.
The opinions expressed by the host and guests on Where Did the Road Go are their own and do not represent those of WVBR or its management. Join us on the web at wheredidtheroadgo.com, where you can send us questions for our live guests via email or the live chat room. You can also check out our upcoming schedule, blog, link section, book reviews, videos, and links to our Twitter, Facebook, iTunes, and much more. That's wheredidtheroadgo.com.
All right, well, it looks like we're having a little bit of a connection problem, so while we deal with that, Lyle is also in a band called Ghoultown, and we have a song here. We're going to hear from Ghoultown, and hopefully by the end of this we'll have him back on the line. And this is called Walking Through the... what is the name of it? It is Walking Through the Desert with a Crow. So, yes... Hopefully after this, we'll have Lyle back on the line. Here we go.
A hole, walking through.
You there, Lyle?
I'm here.
All right. Well, that was sudden.
Yeah, that was very strange. It was, so it's thundering outside, huge thunder, and all of a sudden the power went off. But I have a universal power supply or whatever, uninterruptible, and it kept the computer on, so that was the only thing going, and I could see that. And then I'm talking, and I realize, wait, I don't think anybody can hear me, and then it just goes black. like, man, this is spooky. I'm scaring myself.
Clearly, it's the subject matter.
Exactly. I think I said something really spooky, and then it just all went black. So I consider that a success.
And we heard a song from your band, Ghoultown, there.
Oh, there you go. See, I provide my own intermission music.
And how long were you in the band?
The band has been around since 1998, so...
quite a while.
Yeah, for, I don't know how many years that is. That's 14 or 15 or something.
Nice. All right. Where were we?
What was I talking about? Crazy.
We had talked about the Native Americans. We talked about some of the older cases.
Oh, right. I just had mentioned that there were some newspaper accounts from the 1800s that were documented near the area in question, where they describe some cowboys seeing what they referred to as a wild man, and you know, a hairy wild man, and you know, we believe those to basically be Sasquatch sightings, even though they didn't use the word Sasquatch or Bigfoot, obviously,
right?
Now, they didn't know that term, but.
How close are these to the, like, what is the general description of these creatures?
I mean, you know, basically similar to a Sasquatch. In this case, the average description says they're around 7 feet tall, covered in hair. The hair is, 3 to 4 inches long. A lot of times described as being somewhat, unkempt. They are described in color from being black to, dark brown, gray, in the range of those colors. Often associated with having a rank smell. As far as the facial features, you don't always get that level of detail from every witness. But, a lot of them have described the face as being, ape-like. Dark, very dark skin. Sometimes they describe, like baboon-like teeth, things like that. So rather spooky descriptions. But all in all, equivalent to what I would call a southern Sasquatch, possibly something between a Bigfoot and a skunk ape, But as we know, that there's Bigfoot sightings all over. So
right.
You know,
and why do you think there are these subtle differences in different areas?
Well, logically, I would think that the environment would play a part in these. A lot of times, like the Falk Monster, is not described as being so large and bulky. I mean, obviously, it's big. It's bigger than a man. It does have some bulk, but if you compare those to sightings of some of the traditional sightings of Bigfoot in Northern California, Washington, and things like that, you get a description of a much larger animal. And, that kind of makes sense because, if you're living in the Pacific Northwest in a cold environment in the mountains, you're going to need to bulk up some. But if you're in a swamp in southern Arkansas, you are going to be a little more lean, mean, and unkempt. So, it seems to make sense. I don't know if it's reflective of the culture in which people cite it or if it's, the true nature of the creature. But the subtle differences, I would say, would be location.
Now, do you think these are definitely like physical creatures like any other animals we would find?
I do. I pretty much subscribe to the Bigfoot theory that these are some sort of undocumented animal, you know, more specifically some sort of a primate. I know that there are, you know, reports that associate the Bigfoot with UFO mm-hmm. sightings and other things. And, you know, I mean, ultimately I can't attest to anything absolute, but in this case of the Falk monster, or in most of the cases I've researched in Texas and in anywhere I've gone, I've never had anybody come up with a story that said they saw a UFO in the proximity, or that they right. saw the creature, you know, do anything metaphysical.
Ever reports with them having glowing red eyes or anything like that?
Occasionally there has been reports that the eyes were, you know, bioluminescence in some nature, but there's not been any, in the case of the Falk monster, any that seemed to describe a creature that had unnaturally glowing eyes or anything that would sort of raise a red flag or say that it could be paranormal. It all seemed to just simply be, you know, just some sort of strange animal, and that's the terms in which it was usually described. Because if you go back in time and look at a lot of these old sightings, and I did speak to several people who had sightings in the 60s and things like that, they just simply described it in terms of you know, like a gorilla or things like that, and that's what they drew from because those are the animals they knew, you know.
Right. So, well, I think also, I mean, when you're dealing with the UFO phenomenon, so many strange things happen, and it's so... I mean, when you look in some of the deeper cases, just because a Bigfoot is sighted with a UFO, it doesn't mean it's the same type of thing as you might see out in the wild. I mean, it seems to have an altered state of consciousness effect going on with UFO sightings.
Oh, yeah. Just because you saw... and not to say that, you know, people haven't seen UFOs and then see a big hairy creature. Who's right. to say that, you know, that it actually came from the UFO, or that it's a creature that's the same as what people are describing elsewhere? So, you know, it's just all theories on the table at this point. And, you know, because you just really can't prove or say what it is.
Yeah. And I guess the big skeptical response to this type of stuff is, why haven't we found any remains, any fecal matter, anything like that, that would definitively prove these things?
Yeah, and I mean, that's, you know, you always get that question from people, certainly. And, you know, I mean, just because we haven't found that does not mean that it doesn't exist either. And if what I tell people, if you had interviewed as many people as I had, and you knew people who were very close friends who had very startling sightings, you would be very hesitant and very pressed to explain away these things. And again, it comes back to, they saw something. I mean, you know, now we can't say what it is, but people definitely have seen something very strange, and you just cannot dismiss it out of hand just simply because, you know, I mean, because that person or somebody else hasn't found some bones, you know. Mm-hmm. it just doesn't disprove it.
Right. What is the best physical evidence that we've found?
In the case of the Falk monster, there's been some footprints. A few times there's been footprints that were cast. In that particular case, in that those sightings that are associated with that area, that's the best that I've come up with there. Now, I mean, of course, if you want to broaden that to Bigfoot in general, I mean, there's been, you know, thousands of footprints found. There's been hair samples. There's been, you know, fecal matter. There's been, I mean, there's even been a few things like a tooth was found out in California that still remains to be proven as to just what it is. It's too big to be a man, but it's a man-like tooth. Hmm. And so there, you know, there's not a lot of evidence, but there is evidence. And I think as technology becomes more affordable to what are ultimately amateur researchers, that we're able to test this stuff with more frequency, and hopefully one of these times it will, you know, turn up something definitive. Although, if you don't really have a body to draw, you know, to compare things to,
right.
you don't have a known Sasquatch hair. You don't have a known print. You don't have a known DNA sequence. So at best, you're still taking somewhat of a guess.
Yeah, yeah. What are you familiar with the DNA research that's going on right now with the supposed Bigfoot hair?
Yes.
What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I haven't read the paper. I know they offered it very recently online. You could pay to download it. And there's been talk about this for going on about a year. I mean, everybody, just so much conjecture about it before anybody's ever read it. And everybody's it just seems to be this polarization of people just blindly, you know, believe it and say, oh, this is going to be the ultimate, and start, you know, waving this in front of their skeptic friends, or, you know, they just automatically don't believe it or start trying to shoot holes in it. But it's just now really coming out to where enough people are starting to read this, and more qualified persons than myself. I believe there's an interview, and I literally was going to try to watch it this weekend, where Todd Disotel, which is a DNA specialist, I believe he's out of New York, but he's done a lot of things for Monster Quest in the past, and he's always willing to analyze any big supposed Bigfoot DNA. I think he's read the paper or looked at the evidence, and he's got a comment on it, and he's very just factual, matter of fact about the whole thing. So I'm really interested to find out what he has to say, because ultimately, all the amateur Bigfooters and cryptozoologists like myself or anybody else, it's quickly gets, you know, complicated when you start talking about DNA. Where did it come from? Who handled it? What procedures? You know, what things like this. So, I'm interested to see what these actual experts say about the results that were published in this document.
All right. Well, there's also kind of occasional debate between whether these are animals or some offshoot of human beings, where they're more man than animal. Any thoughts on that?
If I put my money on it, I'm going with something that's more of a animal. I mean, in that debate's come up considerably, because what this paper proposes as is that the hair sample they have does show that Sasquatch is an offshoot of the human lineage, but it doesn't date back very far, and it really seems implausible that a creature could diverge from humans at this point in time and be able to change so radically, evolved into something that looks so far from us. It's just almost impossible. And that's one of the questions on the table, is how can that be? I mean, if it branched off the human line, that there's no way it would, its characteristics and physicality would change that much in the time it's given. And so I still kind of just subscribe back to the, you know, it's more of a primate. It would come from the primate line or some branch into, you know, further back, in which, primates and humans had already diverged, and then it came off the primate line. But, you know, that again, that's, you know, without a body, there's just really no way we're ultimately going to be able to prove or disprove that.
And why do you think we've never found a body?
Well, I mean, that's definitely hard to explain, and I can certainly identify with somebody who, you know, asked that question. All I could say is part of it is due to skill on their part of being, you know, experts at survive and evade. I mean, they've just been lucky this far. You know, it's possible they bury their dead. I mean, obviously they would exist in small populations, So that would be on their side. It's much harder to find, you know, bodies strewn about when there's not very many of them to start with.
Right. And if they have a long lifespan on top of that.
Right. And, you know, it's also just luck that one hasn't been discovered. But, I mean, there's been animals in the past. I know people think, we've uncovered everything there is out in the woods. People just don't realize till you get out in some of these really remote mountainous areas just how much dense forests there are out there. People tend to have this idea we live in these cities and, you know, there's roads connecting everything. And yeah, certainly there is, but there is pockets of, hundreds of thousands of square miles that are just heavily forested, and something that is an expert, that is a skilled, predator or, some sort of primate, it is possible that they could exist undiscovered for this amount of time. It definitely is possible.
Hmm. Okay. What do you think of, like, the multidimensional explanations that they're shifting here to somewhere else, and that's why we don't find these things that easily?
Yeah, I mean, that's, food for thought, obviously. But, I mean, interdimensional creatures, I just wonder why they would be hairy, ape-like looking things. I mean,
right.
I almost think, in my mind, I was thinking, if I'm thinking interdimensional creatures, I'm thinking something more like the Predator,
Right, right.
Or a traditional alien, I don't know. It just seems bizarre that it would be, out of all the interdimensional creatures, it happens to be this ape-like, hairy ape.
Unless it's like a window area where there's just something that these certain areas have special about them, and they're just wandering through.
Yeah, and there is unexplainable things like that. I mean, if anybody's read the book Hunt for the Skinwalker, which talks about the variety of unexplained phenomenon that happened out there in Utah,
and that's just one small ranch too.
It's just one ranch, and I know at one point, these guys claim to have seen this sort of a little tunnel of light or a little black hole open up, and this big hairy creature crawled out of it.
Yeah,
these guys were journalists and scientists. They weren't just wacky amateur dudes running in the woods. I mean, so I don't know how to explain that. I don't know what they saw, but I try to keep an open mind. But at the same time, I do, at least right now, just go in the woods with the idea that these are, just some sort of an animal until I, see something different.
Now, have you actually gone out trying to essentially hunt these things, or?
Yeah. I mean, I've been, active in Bigfoot research for several years, and, I've gone to, a lot of remote areas, and I've researched, in various states, from Texas, Louisiana, Georgia, South Carolina, Oklahoma, Arkansas, and in those times, I do a lot of canoeing through swamps. That's kind of one of my favorite places to go. So I've been out many nights, just hoping that maybe my lucky number will come up and I'll get a sighting or find some evidence. So I kind of split my time between what I call investigative journalism, in which I bring forward these really cool stories like I did in The Beast of Boggy Creek, mix that with just, my own personal pursuits and enjoyment of being in the woods, looking for them.
How do you think you would react if you ever came face to face with one?
I consider myself fairly fearless, and I don't think I would react in panic or fear. I mean, my father is a bow hunter, and ever since I could literally walk, I started hunting with him, and so I've been in the woods so much over my life, and familiar with that type environment. I've kind of built up in my mind that I wouldn't be afraid if I saw one, and I would be doing my best to get a picture or just get a clear view of it. But, you know, it's all, it's another thing when you're standing there looking at a 7 or 8 foot tall,
right,
500 pound animal. I don't know, you know. Well, I guess remains to be seen.
What are some of the more interesting stories you've heard about this thing?
Well, you know, one of my favorite sightings, just that kind of really amazed me and sort of put everything in context as, you know, plausible. In the case of the Falk Monster, and I talk about this in my book, there had been quite a few sightings a little bit southwest of Falk back in the 1960s. And in this place, it was just a little community called Jonesville. And, I mean, the population was very thin. I mean, these people essentially lived on dirt roads in the woods. But several people had sightings, and, you know, quite credible sightings. Some of these people, a few of them, are still alive, and they still swear by what they saw. And so, you know, okay, well, these are all locals, and they're all living there local, and they have these sightings. So, you know, maybe it's mass hysteria. You know, let's look at all the scenarios. But there was a guy who sings in a band called Brave Combo, which is kind of a very popular band down here in the South. And, I mean, they've won a few Grammys. They've even been parodied on The Simpsons.
Wow.
Well, when the founder, Carl Finch, back in about 1967, he was playing a battle of the bands in Shreveport, and he was driving back home in the middle of the night back to Texarkana, where he lived. And this would put you right down this Highway 71 through right past Jonesville, through Falk, right where these sightings were happening. Now, at the time, he had never heard anything about these sightings. These were not in the papers at the time. Nobody but the locals knew of it. Well, he's coming up, and his cousin is driving there in an old VW Bug, and it's very, very dark out on this road at night. I mean, there's nobody out there, desolate, and they're kind of near the Sulphur River. And in the headlights, they see what they believe is a man jogging down the side of the road ahead, going in the direction their car is going. And it's like, that's weird. I mean, you're in the middle of nowhere. They get a little closer. They think, well, the guy's wearing a fur coat, which is really weird because it's spring. And, I mean, this is, you know, it's Arkansas, you know.
Right.
You know, they get a little closer, and he's like, you know, I don't think that's a coat. The thing's covered in hair. It's like a hairy man. And it was pretty big, and he said it was moving very fast. And, you know, by now his cousin is just kind of like freaking out. She's getting over towards the other lane. She's like, I am not stopping. And, you know, just did not know what they see. So they pass by, and he tries to turn and get as good of a look as he could of it. But, of course, once they pass, you know, it just quickly fades into the blackness. And so he just wasn't sure what he saw. And this was 1967. He had never heard of Bigfoot and certainly never heard of the Falk Monster. It wasn't until the 70s that he actually went to the theater and saw The Legend of Boggy Creek. And, man, when he saw this, he went and talked to his cousin and kind of compared notes. And, you know, he's like, man, I think I saw that creature, you know. And she had the same recollection, you know. She's like, yeah, we saw, you know, something, the hairy ape-like man running on the side of the road. And so, you know, the story came out, and I interviewed him and everything. But man, it was really weird because this guy was just a total independent witness. And he sort of corroborated what all those locals had been saying. And I said, Carl, do you realize in 1967 was right in the thick of when all these sightings were being reported, right in the same area you're telling me you saw it? He's like, no, I didn't realize that. I said, man, it, you know, what that says to me is, I mean, I can't explain that. I think you saw, you know, something legitimate, and, you know, it really raises an eyebrow.
Yeah. Yeah. That's an interesting story. How far, now the center around Boggy Creek itself, right, these sightings?
Well, yeah. I mean, yes and no. I mean, a lot of the sightings in the 70s were right there near Boggy Creek. And Boggy Creek is a little bitty creek, but it flows out of another creek, which flows into Mercer Bayou, which flows into the Sulphur River. So they're all kind of connected with Boggy Creek being sort of the end point, which is near Falk. And if you look at the sightings, they do happen along Boggy Creek and then back towards the Sulphur River, all down in there. And it, you kind of get this picture that if something was living out there, a population, a small population of, you know, strange creatures of any sort, down in those Sulphur River bottoms would be exactly where they would live. It's very remote. There's the Sulphur River bottom wildlife management area is 20,000 miles of just, 20,000 acres of remote bottomlands, and it's uninhabitable. It's very swampy. You know, there's been some development down there, but you just, you know, people just can't really live there very well. So when you start looking at the sightings, they sort of, you know, come up out of those river bottoms, and occasionally it's seen closer to Falk. But there's a real pattern to it, and it does show something that would seemingly be what a real animal would do and where it would be sighted.
Huh. All right. So it's a pretty decent sized area too.
Yeah, it's right there, you know, where a lot of people, you know, that, okay, I mean, and I think this would be popular. I mean, you know, you live in New York, you probably get this same kind of thing. Everybody thinks New York is one giant city.
Yeah.
I mean,
right.
You know, no, man, there is so much forestry up there. You know, people just get this sort of mental image, and the same way with like Texas, you know, it's like, oh man, you know, it's just cattle ranches and cowboys. But East Texas, you know, is second only to, well, Texas itself is second only to Alaska in square miles of forestry. I mean, there's just a huge amount, and almost all of it is concentrated there in the eastern portion. And this is all connected there where Arkansas, the border of Arkansas is, and it all kind of flows together to create this really big span of forestry where something could live. There's a lot of waterways. All these, the Sulphur River flows into the Red River, which flows eventually down to the Mississippi. So there's plenty of water, plenty of waterways, and a lot of forestry, even though, yeah, we're near Texas. You know, and here's Arkansas, but definitely it's a prime area.
Have there been any photographs, any video, anything like that?
No, unfortunately not. In this case, the closest I got, you know, somebody said, "Man, I know a guy who had something really strange on his game camera, and he ended up." The photo got erased. I don't know if he erased it or he accidentally erased it. I mean, the guy did say it was kind of freaking the guy out. So,
yeah.
Yet again, just the taste of that. Oh man, I'm like, man, if you just had that photo, you know.
and really, that's never going to convince a skeptic anyway. Because any photo, anything like that, they're just going to say, "Well, it was faked."
Oh yeah, dude. Ultimately, you got to have a body.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and it's unfortunate that, you know, I mean, in Bigfoot itself, there's a lot of a debate against pro kill and no kill and all that, but, you know, which, great, but ultimately, if we don't have a body, you can't believe these videos, you can't believe the photos, no matter how good they are. I mean, I've seen some really good photos that are supposed to be, you know, Bigfoot,
right,
but...
Right.
Man, with what you can do with Photoshop and what you can do with costumes and everything else, there is no way anybody, especially the scientific community, is going to accept it with anything short of a body.
And then that's kind of the pro and con of our technology nowadays. I mean, it's easier to capture something, but it's so much easier to fake something as well.
Yeah, I think so. And I mean, just even just the spread of information itself, I think, is a problem. And one reason I kind of like to look at these cases like I do with Boggy Creek, where I go back in time and I really build the full story. And I when you look back at the sightings, you know, like I'm talking about in the 60s or the 70s, a lot of these people down there, they'd never heard of Bigfoot. So whereas today, you can't hardly go anywhere where somebody doesn't know what Bigfoot is.
Right.
And so... You hope
hope that they haven't been influenced by what they've seen on the internet in all the films or seeing Finding Bigfoot episodes, and you hope that they're not influenced by that, because you can rest assured that some hunter in the 1960s who saw an ape-like creature walking by his stand was not influenced by Bigfoot, because he had never heard of Bigfoot.
Right, right. How are the witnesses you've interviewed? Do they seem slightly traumatized by this stuff, or is it a mixed thing, or are they okay with it?
More than not, they're traumatized by it. Mm. There's been several that didn't want to go back to the area in which they saw it. There's been some that were hunters and they just stopped hunting.
Wow.
There's been some they don't like to necessarily talk about it. I mean, these people really weren't trying to get publicity or anything. In some cases, I had to really coax them to tell me their story and say, you know, I'm doing a serious, you know, book here. But I did get the feeling that they were kind of traumatized to certain degrees by what they had seen, or it's almost like this lingering question of what did I really see? That there's no, that you know, they can't answer, that's not going to be answered. So there's this unanswered question that they've been living with, in some cases, you know, 20 years or whatever.
Right.
You know, which kind of would bug you, you know.
Has this beast ever actually hurt anyone? Has anyone claimed to attack them or anything like that?
There's been a few cases. And the Falk Monster has always had a reputation. And, you know, like in the Legend of Boggy Creek, they kind of portray it to be dangerous. You know, it's going to up and kill somebody.
Right.
And that all kind of came from what is considered sort of the pinnacle sighting, or the most famous sighting, which happened in 1971. And in fact, this is how the story ultimately got out, because what happened was a family by the name of Ford moved into town back in 1971, and they were renting a house. It was two families, and the guys had come there for work. So they were working off at night, and the girls were staying at home. And over the span of a few nights, they kept hearing something come up on the porch, something walking around, something big, something heavy. And one evening, the windows are open. It was hot down there. This was May, so it's already starting to heat up. So they didn't have, you know, central heat and air. You know, it's an old home, you know.
Right.
And so this thing reached what they described as a hairy hand into the window. And of course, you know, they had enough of it. They their husbands would come home, and they're like, you got to do something. I don't know what this thing is, but something big is walking around the porch, and it stuck a hand in here. So obviously they're freaking out. So they borrow a shotgun from the landlord, and they were home, and it was a Saturday night this time, so the guys were home, and sure enough, this thing came back up on the porch, and they decided to confront it. So they grabbed the shotgun, made their way out the door. By this time, the thing had apparently run off back towards the line of the woods, and they came out there with some lanterns, and they just started shooting. And they shot it about seven times, and, you know, it was kind of silence. And so it was three guys, and they all decided, well, we need to go down there and see if we hit it or see if we can see it. The women are screaming. It's just totally crazy. And they go down there looking around. They don't see anything. They don't see any blood. They don't see any creature. And so one of the guys, Bobby Ford, he's very spooked by the whole thing. So he decides, man, I've had enough. I'm heading back up to the house. Guys, you can look all you want. I'm done, man. This is scaring me. So as he's heading back up, now he doesn't have the light. He runs back to the porch. And in that time, This all kind of a flood area, so it's built up on the house is built up on a rise, and he's got to go up a little ladder. So as he's going up the ladder to get onto the porch, something comes out and grabs him, and he described it as some kind of a dark, hairy creature, and he basically tangled with this thing, got away, got up onto the porch, and nearly jumped through the front door. Well, as you can imagine, he's just completely completely inconsolable at this point. And they ended up having to take him down to the Texarkana Hospital. And he was actually treated for, you know, minor injuries, scratches, and shock. I mean, the guy was in total shock. And so that's how the story ended up getting out, because one of the doctors down there was just like, what? You know, he's describing how this hairy monster had been, you know, attacking the family and how he got in a fight with it. And so he calls a guy down at the radio station, said, dude, you know, I got a guy down here that says he's been attacked by a hairy monster in Falk. You know, I mean, he's truly, I mean, this guy's truly in shock, and I think you guys should go check it out. And so the news went out there the next morning, along with the sheriff and everybody else, and, you know, documented the case and printed it in the paper. So the next day, you know, or like on Monday, it comes out, you know, Falk family terrorized by hairy monster. And that really opened the floodgates for everything, and kind of that's what led to the movie. And if anybody's seen The Legend of Boggy Creek, the final climax scene in the movie is based on that incident, the Ford incident.
Right. Okay, well, we're just about out of time, and I wanted to cover something real quick. You said you're going to be on a few television shows.
Yeah, I recently shot a few shows, and as a matter of fact, there's one coming up. There's a new show called American Monsters and Mysteries that's going to air on Destination America. That's one of Discovery's affiliates, and they're doing a episode that features the Falk monster. So, you know, I'm on there. I don't know to what extent, but I did shoot the show and do some interviews and stuff. So it's very cool that there's been kind of a resurgence in. You know, this subject. And later on, I'm not sure when this will air, but I was on a quite popular Bigfoot show on Animal Planet. So again, those are very cool things, you know, and it's always cool to talk about Bigfoot. And so I'm looking forward to those shows.
And where can people get your book?
The best way to just get information on me is go to my website at lyleblackburn.com. There's links there to my book, and it's also available on Amazon. And if you follow the links from my site, it'll give you the links if you want to buy it on Amazon. It's on Barnes and Nobles. It's in, you know, digital format, Kindle, Nook. It's on iBook at iTunes. So yeah, just definitely hit up LyleBlackburn.com, and that'll just click on the book image there, and that'll kind of guide you along, and you can pick your favorite flavor of book.
And you also have links to info on your band Ghoultown on there too, don't you?
Right. Yeah. If you want to check out Ghoultown, definitely there. I think there's a video on my site, but Ghoultown.com.
And it was a pretty cool video too, actually.
Yeah, we shot, you know, we've got one we shot, we did a song for Elvira, Mistress of the Dark, and so we've got a video we shot with her out in Hollywood, so that's always a fun one to watch.
And you also, you write for a horror magazine as well?
Yes, I write for Rue Morgue. It's available on, you know, Barnes and Nobles and finer bookstores, Books a Million, things like that.
Is that fiction that you do for that?
No, Rue Morgue is a... covers the horror culture, so we cover movies, video games, books, anything to do with horror. So I mean, you know, there's several horror magazines out there, and you know, people know Fangoria, and there's Horror Hound, and there's Rue Morgue. I mean, Rue Morgue's been around for a long time, so it's cool to write. I'm the cryptozoology specialist, so you know, there's a lot of horror films that often play in themes of cryptozoology. So being knowledgeable of cryptozoology and being a total, you know, horror movie freak, it's the perfect thing to write about.
Yeah, definitely. And you're working on a new book as well, right?
Right. Yeah, I'm in the process of doing a follow-up, which I'm not sure when it'll be released, but I've been hard at work trying to to come up with something that can top The Beast of Boggy Creek, because if you go look at the reviews, I'm like, oh man, how am I going to top this, man? It's been so well received. I'm like, man, I really gotta outdo myself. Had no expectations when I was writing the first one, so I, you know, I'm just writing it, but now I've got all the pressure's on now.
and you said you actually ended up kind of ending the band because of this work, haven't you?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we've just kind of gone on this indefinite hiatus just because, you know, I kind of took some time off to write the book and, you know, something I've always wanted to do. And, you know, I mean, I can write for RumOrg and I have to do other things for income, you know, to supplement. So I've been doing that. But once I started writing the book and then once the book came out, it's just been just a crazy year. I mean, it's just been nuts and it's just sort of limited my time. So the band kind of had to be put on hold, but you know, man, I've been doing that for 15 years, so I think the band can
take a little time off.
Yeah, you know, it's cool.
And can people get your music on your website as well?
Yeah, ghoultown.com, ghoultown.com. You can buy CDs directly from our store, and it's also available, you know, on Amazon, and you can get it digitally on iTunes and, you know, it's just out there everywhere, so no problem finding that either.
All right. Okay. And LyleBlackburn.com is the website.
Right.
And I thank you so much. This was fascinating.
You bet.
It actually kind of changed the way I look at this stuff a little bit, because I had always kind of looked at it in the maybe multidimensional paranormal sort of way, but after talking to you about it, it's kind of changed the way I think about it a bit.
Cool. That's great. I like to, you know, like I say, it's like they're, you know, all theories are good on the table. We should always look at all the different angles because that's the way we're going to ultimately figure out what it is.
All right. Well, thank you very much. And people should definitely check out your site. There's a lot of interesting stuff on it. It's a very well done site. And we're going to take you out with some Psyche Corporation. And The Last Exit for the Lost is up next. Thanks, Lyle.
Thanks.
Understand the numbers pouring over your connection
to perfection.
5, 8, 3. Have you heard the singing soaking into our transmission?
21, 34, 55, 89, 144. Cousin Tatriot, chambers number 1597, and counting.